Welcome to the Fit Chicks Chat Podcast, where we talk all things fitness, nutrition, and wellness for women to help you live your healthiest and fiercest life inside and out. And now, your hosts, Laura Jackson and Amanda Quinn.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fit Chicks Chat. I'm Amanda Quinn.
And I'm Laura Jackson.
And in today's podcast, we are going to be talking about the top four reasons why your race training might be backfiring on your weight loss efforts.
Whoop, Laura, whoop.
Laura, have you ever noticed, I know it's like, it doesn't sound like super sexy or anything, but have you ever noticed that sometimes when you start training for something in particular, especially when it comes to like races or a lot of like cardiovascular things, have you ever had that happen to you where all of a sudden it would be that you would actually start gaining weight as opposed to losing weight, or that you would start seeing like you're just kind of staying the same, like you're kind of just being a little bit stagnant? Has that ever happened to you?
It hasn't happened to me personally, but I've seen it happen to clients for sure.
Yeah. So see, I've seen it with myself. Like I found like there's times where it's almost like I was overtraining or overestimating the amount of training I was doing. And so we're going to jump into this right away, because I think that this stuff is really important, because I know there's a ton of people that are listening that, you know, maybe it's that you're training from like the couch to 5K, or maybe you're training for a half or a full marathon, or maybe it's one of those like Spartan races or those kind of like obstacle course races or that kind of thing. It could be any of those things, but it could also be, you know, even if you're training for like a long, like what we did, like the Oxfam, like 100K walk, like the hike and things like that. Like depending on what it is that you're training for, it doesn't really matter the length, the distance. These points are basically just going to like highlight some of the things that might actually be sabotaging or backfiring on you as you're doing this type of training and how you can kind of fix that. So, so let's just dive in. So the first thing that, I think is like the key one is overestimating the calories burned. So when you think about when you're training and you think about, you know, like oftentimes you're training and you're thinking, okay, like I'm, you know, training for a half marathon, so I'm running a lot and this and that. And oftentimes that means in your brain, you will think, okay, well, I've run so far today and I've trained so hard. And so then when you overestimate the calories burned, you then start increasing your calorie intake. And oftentimes you end up just either replacing your calories or you actually end up increasing the amount of calories that you're bringing in. And like, that could be like a major problem, right? Because now all of a sudden, if you're thinking I'm burning 2000 calories during my runs, which would be crazy, but if you're estimating that that's how much you're burning, and then you're eating that extra to like refuel, but you're also eating your regular, like regular meals and snacks, etc., you might actually be overeating throughout the day. The other thing is that you might overeat pre-fuel or post-workout. So Laura, can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know that you really know a lot about, from a nutrition standpoint, like how people should be eating before they do any type of training and then what they should be eating after.
Well, the thing when it comes to any type of like long distance cardio, race training and things like that, there's so many factors that play into it. And I know a lot of people, we want like a one answer to that question. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a really broad, there's a broad scope of answers, and it really depends on your body type, the distance, the activity, like, are you running? Are you long distance swimming? Are you, you know what I mean? Biking, like, so a lot of people, what they do is they end up carb loading, mm-hmm. Beforehand. And this is essentially because carbohydrates, they're our first source of energy. So they burn fast and first. That's kind of the way we always remember them. And it's because they turn into sugar in the body. And the sugar is the easiest fuel for our body to access and to burn. But so what they do is they carb load. So you have, you know, circulating sugar in your bloodstream that you can use as energy, but then you also have it in your stores. So stored glucose, so stored energy is called glycogen, and it's stored in your muscles and it's stored in your liver. So the whole thing is when it comes to long distance training is that you're going to, you know, get these stores really full before you start. And then as you do the long distance run or bike or swim, that's why you see a lot of times that, when the person training, what they do is they eat things like, you know, the goo, like, have you seen that? It's just almost like pure sugar. So it's not going to be heavy to disrupt the stomach to make you feel sick, but it's going to give you those easy, accessible calories to be able to keep going for, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. So that's typically how a lot of people end up eating for these types of things. But now we're seeing a big shift where a lot of people are really utilizing fat for fuel. So fats are other system that we can use for energy. So we can use glucose, which is sugar, or we can use fat. But fat is, it's not as easy to tap into as it is to, and it's not as easy for our body to break down to turn into energy. It gives us more energy and longer energy, but it's harder to get into that system. So a lot of people who do actually kind of tap into that fat stores for training, they've become fat adapted like long in advance. So they've kind of already been, you know, utilizing the system. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And showing their body how to use it. So it knows how to essentially effectively burn fat for fuel.
Right. Because I mean, what you're saying there then is if someone is thinking about using fats as opposed to using carbs for fuel, if they haven't sort of trained their body to do so, it may end up kind of backfiring them in a way of providing enough energy source at the time, right? Because it might just not be that instant energy that they're looking for. Is that sort of what you mean by that?
Well, because it's either you use carbohydrates, which turn to glucose for energy, or you use ketone bodies, which end up producing energy as well. So it's ketone bodies, though, they're produced when you're, you know, utilizing fat for fuel. So your body needs something. It needs something that it can burn off of, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, of course.
So for someone who, you know, when you first, it's like when you first go on like a low carb diet, and you know, you feel like super sluggish because your body's like, oh, I don't know. Like, how do I get energy? I'm used to having all these carbs and all this sugar in my blood that I use first. So it's like, okay, wait, now I've got to go into my fat stores or utilizing fat for energy. So that's a different, there's a different process that happens in the body. So then when you start becoming fat adapted and start getting used to using ketones more for energy as opposed to using glucose, then you can, you know, you'll start to feel better and it's different. Like it's a, but at first that initial switch. So it's hard. Like, I mean, I know even for us, when we were doing the Oxfam Trail Walker for 100 kilometers, it's like, I don't eat normally a lot of carbohydrates, like complex carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates. I mostly get my carbohydrates from low glycemic, low starch, high fiber vegetables. So that's all your leafy greens, your cauliflower, broccoli, anything from the brassica family. It's all of onions, radishes, garlic, all that stuff that's, you know, that more watery, like more of the watery vegetables.
Yeah.
But when we did Oxfam, so I'm used to, you know, living off of these low glycemic vegetables. And I kind of thought in my mind, yeah, I'm going to feel the same way. Like it's a 100 kilometer hike. I'm going to just eat, you know, the same low glycemic vegetables and eating, you know, healthy proteins. Yeah. Healthy proteins, healthy fats. But my body was not used to doing that long distance training. So the first thing I went into was like carb craving mania. Like as soon as we hit after like 20K, which, cause we were walking, we weren't running. I was like, oh my God, because I was tired, I was exhausted, cortisol is up, stress is up, lack of sleep, and my body is just like, what can I put in my mouth that's going to give me instant energy that doesn't require a lot of work to process? And that's carbs. So I was like, give me anything sugary, anything, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, no, I remember that walk very clearly. It stands out in my mind. I remember having a lot of donuts and a lot of Red Bull. and then feeling a lot of sick.
Yeah. And a lot of bloated and a lot of gross.
Oh God. Remember near the end, my stomach was like bloated so much that I couldn't even eat. Like my stomach felt so sick that even if I needed food, I couldn't even put it in me because it was like my adrenaline and like everything else just screwed up my body so bad that I was like bloated and full and gross. So.
Well, and that's where it's like, you know, just going back to what we were talking about in terms of how, you know, training for a race or long distance run, it might be causing you to gain weight. And that's where I think a lot of people, like we were saying in the beginning, they don't really understand how to eat for their training. So they're overestimating how many calories they're burning uh-huh. during their workouts. They might be carb loading too early. You know, they're carb loading just for their practice runs as opposed for their race.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're not replenishing properly too. And your body starts to, you know, go into all these different cravings and like your body just always wants to be in balance. So if you're feeling like you're craving things or you're feeling like your body is like really talking to you, that's because it's trying to get you back into balance. So you're doing something wrong. So you got to listen to that.
For sure. And I think, I mean, just to add to sort of some things that you were just saying, like when we're talking about overestimating calories burned, so that's sort of the problem that a lot of times people run into. And another solution though, so what you were saying about, you know, like learn to like understand what your body needs. Also, I think one of the other things that people rely on often and that causes a lot of overestimating calories burned and overeating afterwards is that they rely on like Fitbits or other tracking devices to track their calories burned instead of just being an intuitive eater. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, because I think that once it becomes a very much a numbers game, unless you are tracking for a specific event, mm-hmm. if you're tracking your calories burned, but you're not tracking your calories in, you're not really tracking anything.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. Like, who cares how many calories you've burned if you don't know how many calories you're taking in? Because if you're taking in double that, you're still going to be gaining weight.
Oh my gosh. And like, how many times do people underestimate the calories in foods? Like, that's like the most insane thing, right? Is because we automatically, especially if you're eating stuff that's like packaged, if you're eating packaged foods, oh my God. Like that's one thing that I really like here in Canada, how I actually do like that they've now added the calorie counts on like menus and things like that at restaurants. Because if you are going to be eating out, like I think that it has opened up a lot of people's eyes to like exactly how many calories they're actually eating. Cause they're thinking like, oh, I'll just eat this, like, you know, burger or something like that. And in their brain, they think it's like, oh, it's like 300 calories, but it's really like 1,000 calories because of all of the sauces and like everything they add to it to make it taste good. And so I think it's a good thing because I think that it helps people make better decisions. But anyways, I'm sort of digressing here. I'm kind of going off topic, but really what I'm trying to say though is like, I do think it's a good thing to know how many calories you're burning. If you're going to be tracking it through like one of those devices, I think it's good. But if, like you said, if you're not tracking how much food you're putting in, or if you're not being intuitive about just eating, like you recognize when you're hungry and you eat and you stop when you're full, like, and they say that you should stop at about 3/4 full, right? So not when you feel stuffed, but when you actually just feel like you feel like you feel satisfied. Like you're like, okay, I'm no longer like just like jamming food in my mouth because I'm so hungry kind of thing.
But that's where
you never really eat when you're that hungry either though, right? You should be eating.
No. And that's where though, one of the other real issues come into it. And again, we're kind of jumping around here, but I think just on that topic of eating at like 80% full, it's a really hard place to get to because the problem is that now with foods being so processed, unless you're eating real whole foods and you're getting all the nutrients in, a lot of times you're not firing what's called your nutrient receptors, and these receptors line your entire digestive tract. So if you're not eating enough nutrients, so you might've eaten 2000 calories in your meal, but there's no nutrition in it. So just say you ate 200 calories of bagels and chips and whatever, yeah, and there is no nutrition in it. your body is still going to be starving from a cellular level. Your body is still going to be craving more nutrients. So then you're going to still have those cravings and your body's still going to feel hungry. So you might think, well, I'm not 80% full because I'm still so hungry. But the reason being is that those nutrient receptors aren't telling the brain, yeah, we have enough nutrition in here. You can shut off hunger and cravings. So it's very interesting. And that's where this disconnect between, you know, the mind body starts to happen, because we don't realize, like, we're really screwing with the conversation that's happening, you know, automatically within our body. Like, this is not something your brain, your conscious brain tells your body, like, hey, no, stop hunger cravings. You know what I mean? Like, I can't consciously be like, I want to lose 20 pounds and I want to have no hunger cravings. So stomach, don't tell brain that I want hunger. It doesn't work like that. Like, our body, again, I say it every podcast, but it wants to be healthy. It wants to be in balance. So when you're not feeding it the right things, it starts talking to the brain and says, feed me more nutrition. We need more nutrition. And that's where, again, this overeating cycle starts from. So I just think that 80% full, it's good if you're eating real whole food. But if you're not eating real whole food, it's a very hard place to know you're at.
Interesting. Cool. Okay, we're going to get back on track. I'm sorry, everyone. I've kind of pulled us sideways a little bit because we started talking about overestimating calories burned. And then we started talking about, like, the actual food part of it. So, but basically what we were saying about overestimating calories burned. So that's, like, one of the top reasons why sometimes your race training might be backfiring on you, and you might actually start seeing that you are maybe gaining weight or, sort of staying at the same place, especially if you're using race training, not only for a training, like for a goal, but also for weight loss. So the number one thing is that you might overestimate the calories burned. So really just pay attention to what you're putting in your body. You know, try to be an intuitive eater, try to eat real whole foods made with love. We always talk about this. And one of the other tips is avoid the gel packs and sport drinks, et cetera, because they say that you only need those if you are running or training for more than 75 minutes at a time. And even then, you could probably get away with, like, even a little bit longer, like even 90 minutes before you would actually require any of those. So keep that in mind. They're not necessary for, you know, if you're doing a 20-minute run, you don't necessarily need a sports drink or one of those gel packs for energy, especially if you're eating real whole foods and you're, you know, fueling your body throughout the day. So the second thing that might be causing your you to backfire on your weight loss efforts, if you're doing race training, is only focusing on LISS training and not adding strength into your routine. So LISS is low intensity steady state. So that's like the steady state cardio. So, and I know that oftentimes when we think about this, we think like, okay, well, but I'm training to do a 5K. So of course I want to just be doing a lot of running, which in theory sounds like it makes sense. But if you're not adding strength training to your routine, you're basically just causing your body. So basically, like, when you're doing only lifts, you're causing your body to begin metabolizing your muscle, and therefore you're lowering your resting metabolic rate, which then increases your fat overall. So it's really just kind of like a very counterintuitive thing to do. So you really need to be adding strength training to your routine, regardless of the type of training that you are trying to, like, the end goal that you're trying to achieve.
Totally. Like, the thing that's interesting when it comes to training is that it is a stress on the body. And a lot of times we don't realize that, you know what I mean? Like, we think we're always doing something good for our body, which we are. Exercise has so many benefits, but it is a stressor. Mm-hmm. And when your body is in a state of stress, combine that with whatever else is going on in your life or your health, it might not be responding the way you want it to, or the way you think it should be. So, like, for example, like, when you're doing more list training, or more, like, let's use running, because we're talking about running, that releases more of a cortisol response. So cortisol is our stress hormone, and it comes from our adrenal glands. And essentially, it's not a bad thing. Everyone's like saying cortisol is a bad thing, but it does have effects in our body that makes us hold on to fat.
Right.
Because what ends up happening is cortisol, which is, you know, our stress hormone, And it also, cortisol, the thing is, whenever you think of cortisol, people are like, well, what is cortisol? It's essentially, it's the hormone that helps you wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night. So it's part of that sleep-wake cycles. Like, that's how you always think of your cortisol is higher in the morning because it wakes your body up. And then throughout the day, it should, you know, slowly dip down by the end of the day so you can go to bed for the night. But what happens now is we're not having those natural dips. We just have this high level of cortisol all the time. But when cortisol is high, what ends up happening in your body is that cortisol and insulin have an adverse relationship. So they are kind of like opposites. So if your cortisol is high, then your insulin is going to be low, which means you're going to have a lot of blood sugar circulating. And that's a lot to do with, you know, insulin resistance and a lot of weight related issues, diabetes, all that stuff, because we're stressed out all the time. We're putting our body into stress. So if you're doing the wrong kind of exercise and you're putting your body into stress, you're kind of counteracting a lot of things. Whereas if you do weight training, you actually have more of a testosterone response, which for a lot of us out there as women, we hear that and we're like, what? I don't want a testosterone response, but our bodies don't even naturally produce enough testosterone for us to get super big and bulky. So that's like, we can't be stressing about that. But that also helps us, you know, testosterone, we're not going to gain as much weight. We're going to be able to preserve muscle, as opposed to when you're in a cortisol response, which is going to make you gain weight and also ends up breaking down our muscle.
Right. No, for sure. Also, I mean, when it comes to focusing, like not adding strength training to your routine, I found this fact really interesting. So this was actually from Dustin Raymer, who's a fitness director at Structure House. And he was explaining that when you do long-term steady state cardio, so list training, and you kind of just only focus on that, it actually tricks your body into thinking that your exercise time is your normal metabolism. So then it slows down your resting metabolism. So basically what he's saying is that when you're doing that long steady state cardio, so you're going for a run for an hour, that, your body starts understanding that as where your normal metabolism should be at, because it's kind of learning to react in that way. And then it slows down your resting metabolism. So that means that you are burning less calories at rest. So your resting metabolic rate lowers and decreases when you are at rest. So, you know, 90% of your day when you are at rest, your resting metabolic rate is now decreasing as opposed to increasing. So you want to learn to fire that up. And so basically, you know, one of the ways that you can combat that is to add strength training. So he suggests that, you know, if you add strength training a couple times a week, it actually increases your resting metabolic rate. And so you want to kind of find that balance, and you don't want to just have your body understanding that one cycle only, because then you're going to have a lower resting metabolic rate and you're going to be burning less calories at rest, which is the majority of your day when you're at rest.
Well, and that's where, I mean, I just want to make sure our listeners too, though, know that, like, when we're talking about, you know, long-term steady state cardio and things like that, like, we're not saying don't do it, because I think sometimes, you know, we'll hear different studies and we're like, whoa, I do run. Maybe I shouldn't be running at all. It's not that. It's that.
Oh no, not at all.
It's the fact too, I think a lot of it that doesn't get talked about is giving your body the adequate rest and recovery. So you know what I mean? Like, it's like, if you're training for a marathon, you're not doing a marathon, then another marathon, then another marathon. It's like you do a marathon and then you give your body time to recuperate, and you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And also tying in different strength training. I mean, if you're training for a specific event, that's the one thing that it gets a little bit challenging though, because if you're doing a lot of strength training while you're just, say, trying to train for running and you're making your hips super tight, by weightlifting, it could be slowing you down from your run time. So it all depends. That's why at the beginning I was like, it all really depends on eating for your specific body type, your specific goals, training for your specific stuff. But the rule of thumb, essentially though, if you're an everyday worker outer and you're not a specific athlete, is to definitely, I always say, is strength training and high intensity interval training or interval training. If you can't go to that high intensity because of health issues, even just doing interval training is way more beneficial than long low intensity steady state.
Right. But if we're talking, I mean, but what we're talking about today is more about how sort of race training can be affecting your weight, right? So not necessarily, yes, for sure. If you're adding too much strength training and getting really tight in your joints, you could be slowing yourself down. But if we're not really like focusing on like the timing side of it, but we're more just focusing on like how all of a sudden you could start seeing, you know, changes to your body where you're like, oh, I thought because I'm training for a marathon, I could be losing weight. And instead I'm gaining weight. These are sort of some of the reasons why. And it could be just from just doing too much of the same of that long steady state cardio and not mixing it up with some strength training to increase your resting metabolic rate.
Well, and also I think everything to do with what you just said, really it goes back to that cortisol, because it's not even just your resting metabolic. When you have that elevated cortisol for a long period of time, that's usually what's keeping your body from losing weight if you're doing the long term. But I just don't want anyone listening to think, cause I know, so, like, I hear this a lot. It's like, I shouldn't do this or I should do this, but it's like, if you're doing periods of long-term steady state, it's okay. It's okay. But it's when you do it, like even for Dustin Reamer, when he was talking about that, he's even saying like, usually that happens with your metabolism far into your training. It's not like the first time you do it, you're suddenly going to have a low resting metabolic rate, but it's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's the over wear and tear on your body over time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So the third thing that could be affecting your body and backfiring on you is not staying hydrated enough. So dehydration is a big thing. Because in this, I mean, a lot of listeners out there will know this, and oftentimes we know it, like, we know it in our brains to be true, but oftentimes we just don't like really pay attention to it. But that thirst can actually oftentimes be mistaken for hunger and lead to overeating. And you hear this all the time, right? Like, I know I've been hearing this for years and years, that sometimes when you feel hungry, sometimes it's just like, because you're actually really dehydrated and you need to drink water. And then sometimes you'll be like, oh, actually I'm not. I was just really thirsty. But so that's one of the reasons, like, you might actually be overeating because you're overcompensating, but really, in fact, you're actually dehydrated. So they say on average, a woman needs 2.7 liters of water per day and men need about 3.7 liters of water. And so when you think about that, I'm like, even when I think about that number, I'm like, am I drinking that much water? Like, probably not.
Well, but and that's the base and that's the base even before you start adding in your workouts.
Totally. Yeah. No, this is like baseline stuff. So this is like, but I'm thinking about it and I'm like, I probably don't drink that much water in a day. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, and I do, and I am active and I do a lot of like, I do a lot of hot yoga, so I should be hydrating even more because I'm like sweating my butt off all the time and like releasing all of like, I'm probably so dehydrated. Let's just be real. even though I drink probably about 2 liters a day, that's, I always thought that was enough, but it's definitely probably not.
But you also eat. And the thing we kind of forget when it comes to water is you eat a lot of vegetables, you eat a lot of fruit. And if you eat a lot of those low glycemic vegetables I was talking about earlier, cause they're all the watery ones, they have so much water content. So that gets counted into, and if you drink herbal teas and things like that. So I think sometimes we kind of forget about those things.
I do take into account my herbal teas as part of my water. I only do for myself just because it's like one of the things that I really enjoy, especially now that it's starting to get warm here in Canada. I like started adding like a lot of like iced herbal teas to the mix to switch it up.
Well, yeah. And when you have like the thing with hydration too, and we always give our water tip, and I still give this, I've been giving this tip for, I think 10 days, but 10 days, 10 years. But I think that it's like still,
or 10 days.
I think it's still one of the best tips. And I actually still use it. And all you do is you just take a 500 milliliter bottle of water. You put 5 elastics around it, or 6 elastics if you want to go over. And that will give you 3 liters of water. So every time you drink the bottle, you take off an elastic. And if you're someone like me who constantly loses hair elastics or has them on their wrist, it's kind of perfect because you have all your hair elastics on your bottle and you take one off as you drink a bottle of water and then put the hair elastic on your wrist. So you know by the end of the day, okay, all my elastics are gone. I've hit my water target. And it's a visual reminder, and it's, we're naturally goal oriented. So by knowing that we completed the task, it's like we feel good because we got like the gold star, right? And then you have hair elastics, you drank your water, like it's a win-win. I love it.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, it is. It's a really good way of doing it. I mean, for me, it's more of like, I just, the way that I've always done it is I always have like a big water bottle, like a large one. And I make sure that I fill it up at least 4 times a day. But right now I only use a 750 ml bottle. And so I'm definitely not getting enough water. I really have to start paying attention to that. I do agree with you though. I mean, like I do eat a lot of veggies. I do eat a lot of fruits. I do have teas and stuff, but at the same time, I feel like it's mentally my brain. I just need to drink like more straight up water just to make myself feel like I've hit that. I feel like I should be drinking like 2.7 liters of like straight water and then using the others as my like added stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Completely. I need to buy a water filter. That's the next thing on my list of stuff.
Oh, I have a great one.
Yeah. I want to get a reverse osmosis system.
Do it.
Yes. Because tap water is very sketchy, no matter where we live. It is. It's scary. It's scary what's in it, but that's for another conversation.
Yeah, no, definitely another conversation, but we've had one since we moved into this house. We purchased one, like it was like one of the first purchases I made because I was like, I need that. okay. And so moving on from dehydration, the final thing that could be causing you to backfire on your weight loss strategy or goals is chronic inflammation. And Laura, I know you like talking about inflammation because it's one of the things that you find really interesting. But basically, you know, when we talk about chronic inflammation, it's like, you know, your body's psychological response to inflammation and swelling is that you might start feeling more puffy, more achy than usual. And it can lead to gain weight because you're running so much. Like, so whether you're running, biking, as Laura was saying, swimming, et cetera, is that your body, because it's starting to basically swell, you might start actually gaining weight. So your weight gain might necessarily not be specifically like weight from calories, it might actually just be like a lot of swelling and inflammation in your body specifically. So the best way to reduce this type of weight is to avoid extreme swings in your training. So distribute your miles evenly, you know, take rest days, give your body time to heal, stretch, foam roll, which, oh my gosh, if you haven't done it already, you should be trying it. It's like in the moment, if you're really tight, like I am, it really hurts, but
it hurts so bad.
It is so good. I know.
Oh, I know. No, like it's
We're not selling it very good right now.
No, but the thing is people need to know the truth. Like I'm not going to sit here and tell people like, yeah, you need to foam roll.
No,
yeah. Like it hurts like a biatch.
I don't even roll. Like I flop down on it and then I just like stay in place and like, I just like hang out for like 20 seconds. Then I move like a half a millimeter. Like I literally can't roll completely. And I practice yoga almost every day and I still, but it's all like the deep stuff, right? Like I'm so tight. So anyways.
Oh no. I gave myself like a foam rolling challenge in January. I was like, okay, you're committing for one of your New Year's healthy habits. You're going to do 10 minutes of foam rolling a day for 30 minutes. And the first day I did it, I think I lasted a minute. Like it was so painful and I felt bruised.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's awful. It's awful, but we really recommend it. So try it. It's like, I feel like we're like one of those things where you're like, when you eat something and you're like, oh, this tastes terrible. Do you want to try some? And someone's like, why would I want to try it? That's kind of like what we're doing right now to foam rolling. But
no, but it's the same thing after first day of working out. Like after your first day of working out, you're so sore. You're like, why the hell would I want to do this to myself? But your body adapts. So like, by the end of my 30 days, I was up to maybe like 5 minutes and it still killed me. But
are you still doing it now?
No. I've been delinquent again, but it's also because my foam rollers are at the cabin and I haven't been there. So,
All right. Well, so yeah. So, I mean, chronic inflammation can definitely also be a culprit though. So, as we were saying, like the best way to combat the chronic inflammation, give yourself rest days, give yourself time to heal, stretch, foam roll. And there's also actually, foods that you can eat. There's anti-inflammatory foods that can also help reduce inflammation in your body. I know that there's cherry juice, which I've read about years ago and I recommend it to people, but it's gotta be like straight up cherry juice. It can't just be like, like a cherry, like Kool-Aid or something. Like, it has to be like straight up cherry juice. Go to like a natural health food store to buy it. Avocados, also salmon, leafy greens, and walnuts are all foods that actually help reduce inflammation in your body.
Well, and that's where, when it comes to inflammation, again, and this is where I'm saying this for like the sixth time in this conversation, but the thing with inflammation is it all, again, ties back to a lot of cortisol levels. If it's chronic. So there's two types of inflammation. There's acute and there's chronic. So acute is when, like, you know what I mean? You suddenly have like a pain and then that skin goes red because you hit it and then it goes away. Or it's like directly after a run and you're like swollen after that run. That's acute. But if it's chronic or systemic, it means it's ongoing. And a lot of that, again, has to do with stuff that's going on inside your body that you can't see. And it's your body's almost like, it's like your body thinks it's under attack in a sense. Mm-hmm. It thinks that it's like some, it's got its, all its red flags up to be like, okay, what's going on here? Like, it's inflamed because it's trying to heal itself, but maybe there's nothing in there that's going on to help the inflammation. So not only do you want to make sure you're stretching, you want to make sure, like Amanda said, you're eating those anti-inflammatory foods, you're sleeping to lower the cortisol, you're managing your stress. I don't know how many people who are like uber stressed out and overwork out, which is like a deadly combo. It's not good. Like, when you are overly stressed out in your life, you need to just chill. And that doesn't mean not exercising. It just means not exercising in these extreme, like running or, you know what I mean? Like all these really long distance, long, heavy stuff. You need to be doing more of the walking, the swimming, the yoga, still exercising, but nurturing your body in a different way.
Of course. No, it's so important. It's interesting that you even say that, because even for me, I've noticed a huge shift in my body since I went back to adding almost a daily yoga practice again into my life. Because before, I was doing all HIIT training, all HIIT, all high intensity interval training, constant, and doing long distance running. So I was doing 10K three times a week. And I didn't really notice that much of a difference in my body. And now I've been noticing much more of a difference. And I also rest more. And that's just because, you know, I found that it works better for my body. It just does. And it's probably because I do have like a lot of different added sort of stresses in my life. Right. So I have to pay attention to that, but yeah, so definitely chronic inflammation, that is your key. Like, you have to pay attention to it, and you have to, like, if you are noticing that you're feeling really puffy and achy more so than usual, you need to give yourself time to rest, heal, stretch, foam roll, even though we say it's so painful, just try it and eat those foods. All right. So we're going to wrap this up. So so as we talked about, the top four reasons that your race training might be backfiring on your weight loss efforts. The first one is you're overestimating your calories burned. The second one, you're only focusing on long, steady state cardio and not adding strength training to your routines. You might be really dehydrated. Or the fourth one is that you might have chronic inflammation or any kind of inflammation in your body. So, Laura, what would you say is the number one takeaway that you would like our listeners to take from this today?
Well, I think my main takeaway, I of course always usually have five, but I just think the main thing is, well, the main thing I just want everyone to know is more is not better. And there's still kind of that mentality out there that if I run more, if I lift more, if I go like more time, more, that I'm going to get better results because I'm putting in more, I should get out more. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way that the body works, because we talked a lot about on past podcasts too, like looking at it from a holistic approach. You have to look at your whole body, your whole person, your whole emotional life, your physical stress, your mental stress, like all of these things play into, especially if you're focusing on weight loss. And I mean, we talk a lot about this in our natural weight loss coach program as well. You cannot isolate it just to, I'm going to work out harder and I'm going to burn more and get better results, or I'm going to eat less and get and lose weight. You've got to look at the whole person. So yeah, get out of that mentality and just really start to listen to your body more and see how you're reacting to certain things and at certain times. And it will help you kind of uncover this.
Definitely. That's a really good point. I like that. I like that it's not always more, and it's true. And it's so hard to get out of that mentality, though. And I guess my main takeaway for this would be, you know, whether you are training for, you know, whether it's a walk or a run or a bike race or anything like that, just make sure you listen to your body. Because on days when you feel like when your body is saying no, like even though your brain might be saying, yes, I have to do this, but your body is saying no, listen to your body. Because in the big picture of things, it will help you get to your end result faster. Because if you're exhausted and you're pushing yourself to go for a run, that's when you can injure yourself. That's when you can strain. That's when you can like end up just being like, you know what, forget it. I don't want to do this anymore, because you get so overwhelmed or you get so exhausted. So as you are, as you're going through this training process or any kind of process, just listen to your body, honor your body. Obviously, if it's just because you're like, oh, I just don't feel like doing it, I usually recommend like kind of mentally push through it. But if it's physically that your body is telling you to rest, take rest when you need to, listen to it and work your limitation, like build your program slowly and carefully and really just like feed your body the right way in order to get the best results that you'd like. All right. So that being said, we are wrapping this baby up. So as always, we love to hear from you. If you have any questions, if you have any topics or ideas that you'd like to hear about, email us info@fitchicks.ca. Also check us out on social media. We are at fitchicks.ca on Instagram and Twitter, and at Fitchicks Bootcamp on Facebook. And definitely, if you're interested in learning more, you want to grow, learn as a health or fitness professional, check us out at fitchicksacademy.com. We've got some awesome education certification programs, and we'd love to have you join us. All right. So that being said, have yourself an amazing day. Thank you so much for listening, and we will chat with you again real soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Fit Chicks Chat Podcast. Want more healthy love? Visit www.fitchicks.com for amazing resources, free workouts, recipes, tips, and so much more to help you live your healthiest and fiercest life, inside and out.